Welcome to the Locked On Steelers podcast. I am your host, Tony Serino, and this is your daily dose of all things Steelers. My apologies for no podcast yesterday. No internet here where I was, so it makes it impossible to do this podcast. But I am back today. We'll talk about what I wanted to talk about yesterday, which is really an extension of the conversation we had on Wednesday about this franchise and about the Steelers organization and how it has become the model franchise. You know, I got a lot of good feedback to that podcast, and maybe not the feedback I was expecting. A lot more people tweeting at me and responding to me saying, yes, this organization is a model franchise, and it has led to a lot of success, but it has also, the Steelers' mentality has also led to this idea of squandering championships, right? And this idea that we don't act fast enough, and it has led to this team squandering quality talent. And I want to talk about that today because it is an interesting one. And it is very much a discussion of today, right? We wouldn't be having this discussion if last season had ended in a Super Bowl. We wouldn't be having this discussion if last season had ended, you know, in a way that felt more satisfactory, right? But because of the way last season ended, of course, it is in the front of our minds now that, boy, feels like this team could use some major upheaval to try and put this team over the top. So I want to talk about that. I want to explore that today, not just about last season, but about this organization as a whole and, you know, and just the idea of squandering championships. So I want to talk about that today because I think it is a really, really interesting topic. Before we do that, let's start today with some Steelers news and notes. The Cleveland Browns will be on Hard Knocks this year. That is the HBO show that takes you through training camp, 4 weeks of training camp. You get to know the coaches, some of the best players on the team, and then some of the guys who are, you know, near the bottom of the roster who are trying to make the 53-man roster. Really good show, you know, well produced every year. And having the Cleveland Browns on the podcast, I think, is going to make for really compelling television. You know, this is a team that, again, as we've talked about, a 1-31 in the last 2 years. They've certainly done a very good job of acquiring talent, and this is really a season where the questions are all going to be about whether or not they can put it together. And so we'll see, you know, we'll see how Baker Mayfield adapts to being a Cleveland Brown and how Hugh Jackson, going into a season where, you know, he is very much on the hot seat, and how he, you know, coaches this team through training camp and all of the young players, and how this team meshes. You know, it's, again, as I've said, that is a team that is in need of a culture shift. They have a culture of losing right now, and they need to fix that. And so it'll be really interesting to see that team and have an insight into that training camp process and how that team evolves over the next couple months. It's going to be really fun to watch. The Pittsburgh Steelers will announce their new throwbacks, or they will show off their new throwbacks that they will wear in the 2018 season on May 30th. So that's about 12 days from now. I'm hopeful that they keep it classic and just go with the 70s throwback, right? The same kind of uniform the Steelers wear today, but just with block numbers. And I know it's not the sexy pick, and it's not a drastic change. You know, we're coming off of the Bumblebee uniforms that the Steelers have worn in the past, and we've seen them wear the Batman uniform and a lot of their crazier designed uniforms. But the Steelers have never gone back and just done a throwback to the 70s Steelers or even the 90s Steelers, right? The Steelers made the change from block numbers to the more modern numbers in 1997, I believe it was. And, you know, have not gone back since. And I know that a lot of this throwback thing is about marketing and about selling jerseys. And, you know, they already sell a lot of the block number jerseys. And it's not a drastic change, you know, whereas the Bumblebee uniform was a, you know, hey, look at me, Bumblebee uniforms. And what started off as being, you know, the most, the least liked uniform in sports all of a sudden became a hot seller. And if you go to a Steeler game now, you will see multiple Bumblebee jerseys. So we'll see what the Steelers do. I have a feeling it's going to be something like the Batman uniform, the kind of yellow shoulder pads thing. I have a feeling that's what it's going to be. But I would like to see this team just throw back, even for a year, back to the block uniforms or the block numbers in the 70s. And as I've said, my favorite uniform the Steelers are wearing right now is the Color Rush. I think it is the perfect blend of kind of the modern look for uniforms with a throwback with the block numbers to that kind of 70s era. I wouldn't mind if that became the Steelers uniform full time, but that's a discussion for another day. So again, new throwbacks will be shown off on May 30th. And then finally, the new kickoff rule. The proposal for that is out. And so we have the full details on the likely changes to the kickoff rule that are going to come. They are that the players must line up 1 yard within where the ball is kicked. So previously it was 5 yards. It allowed players to get a running start, right? Because you can line up 5 yards behind where the ball is going to be kicked and then kind of run up with the kicker. This will eliminate running starts on kickoff. So because you have to start within 1 yard, you're basically going to get, you know, one step on your way to covering the kickoff. Wedge blocks have been completely eliminated. Previously, it allowed they allowed the two-man wedge. Now they have just completely eliminated wedge blocks. So wedge blocks are where two blockers are standing, you know, basically side by side in a wedge formation. That is no longer allowed. So that will be called a penalty. And then you cannot block or pass the, quote, restraining line, which is the 45-yard line, until the ball is touched or hits the ground. So this is basically a rule that is saying, this is a rule that is saying if the ball is going out of the back of the end zone, right, if this is going to be an obvious touchback, no blocks, right? We just eliminate blocks on that play. And that, you know, we'll see how that plays itself out. I mean, again, you know, this is very much changing kickoffs very drastically. And it likely to me is leading to a world in which there are no longer kickoffs. And then the final rule is if the ball touches the ground in the end zone, it's an automatic touchback. So this eliminates any returners who let the ball fall into the end zone and then pick it up and run it out of the back of the end zone. That will no longer happen. As soon as the ball hits the ground in the end zone, automatic touchback. And again, all of this is in an effort to stop the, you know, the kind of high speed crashes that happen on kickoffs. It has been so widely publicized that kickoffs are the most dangerous play in football. The most concussions happen on kickoffs. And so this is just another way to kind of, and what I don't understand is why is the NFL even keeping kickoffs at this point, right? We've changed it so often now. We started it by moving the kickoffs to the 35 and making touchbacks more likely. But then that led to teams taking it out of the end zone more often. And while it led to more touchbacks, it didn't lead to less concussions because players were still taking it out of the back of the end zone. Those blocks were still happening. So then they moved it to the 25, right? They moved it so that the touchback was now the 25, which they thought, okay, that will incentivize players to not take it out of the back of the end zone. But what that ended up doing was that incentivized kickoff teams now to kick it to the 1 yard line so that there were no touchbacks. Because again, I don't have to stop you before the 20 in order for this to be a profitable venture for me. I have to stop you before the 25. And so that led to more kickoffs. And so this is just the next in line. And again, every time they make rules like this, they have good intentions, but there's always the opposite outcome that they want. And I think that's going to happen again today. You know, look, without, you know, you're not going to have players have a running start anymore. So yes, that will incentivize teams to kick it out of the back of the end zone because it's going to be harder to cover. But also they've eliminated wedge blocks and they've eliminated blocking before this restraining line. So that's going to lead to less blocking on some of these. You know, I actually don't know what the outcome of this is going to be. I don't know what kickoffs are even going to look like in 2018. But what I do know is that this is probably the last year of kickoffs, right? This is such a drastic change to kickoffs that it seems much more likely to me that they're just going to eliminate kickoffs and start the ball at the 25-yard line after change of possession, or after touchdowns or things like that. It doesn't make the kickoff rule and the constant changes to it. Look, just eliminate the kickoff altogether. Yes, it will eliminate onside kicks, or what it really will eliminate is the idea of the surprise onside kick. But because you're having to line up within 1 yard anyway, surprise onside kicks were pretty much going to go away regardless. And if you want to keep onside kicks because they are such a big part of the game, even though they're rarely successful, they still lead to some pretty exciting moments at times. So you want to keep that. So I think that will just end up becoming like the 2-point conversion rule, where you instead of opting to take the ball, to give the ball the team at the 25, you will opt into an onside kick and then you will line up with a traditional onside kick. I think that's where kickoffs are headed. I think these are very, very drastic changes to kickoffs. I don't know whether this is going to lead to more kickoff returns or less. I think it could go either way with some of the rules that they've changed. But it'll be something to keep an eye on for sure. And again, like I said, I think this is probably the last year of kickoffs. All right, then let's get to this idea that the Steelers have in some ways squandered the opportunity at championships because of their stable nature, right? The idea that they're not going to make any drastic changes, and so that by not making drastic changes at times when you need to, we have cost ourselves in some way. That's an interesting topic. It's an interesting topic, and it is very much of today. It is very much a topic of today, because if the Steelers had won the Super Bowl, unless you even made it to the Super Bowl, right? We wouldn't be talking about this team, you know, squandering anything, right? Because they would have made it at least far enough that it would have felt like it was a successful season. But because last season ended in such dramatic failure in a lot of ways, this is a conversation that comes up. And I think it's an interesting one, because I think we can go back and look at not just this year, right? This year is an interesting one, but part of the problem I have with having this conversation today about, you know, whether or not the Steelers should be doing more drastic things to fix this team. And of course, we're talking about whether or not we should be releasing Kevin Butler or potentially, I mean, I guess the most drastic one, but you heard it from the Steelers minority owner. And again, not the guy who hired the Panthers, but you know, one of the Steelers minority owners saying that we should fire Mike Tomlin, right? Now that to me gets, you know, it's a bit early. In fact, this entire thing, right, it reminds me a lot of, last year reminds me a lot of 1994. 1994 was a year, it's the first year I remember watching football, the whole year. I mean, I remember watching every game of the 94 season. I was all in on the 94 season. I was 9 years old at the time. All in on the 94 season. And that was a team that was extremely good. Very, very good defensively. Offense, they had Barry Foster, who I believe led the league in rushing that year, or was number two to Emmitt Smith. I mean, he was on a tear. That was a fantastic football team. Neil O'Donnell at quarterback, again, he was very much in the Trent Dilfer type, you know, doesn't throw interceptions, but, you know, never going to be a great game-winning quarterback. But he was good. He was good enough. And that 94 team should have done much better than it did. It got to the AFC Championship game against the San Diego Chargers in Three River Stadium, and they found a way to lose that game to Stan Humphries and the San Diego Chargers. A horrific loss in that game. And that was Bill Cowher's third season, I believe. Third season. Now, that year, no one really goes back and looks back at the San Diego Chargers year as being, boy, what a disappointing year. We should have changed some stuff. And, you know, that was a real disaster of a season, right? Even though it was all of those things. But the reason why we don't look back at it that way is because that team went on the next year to play in the Super Bowl against the Dallas Cowboys, had a real chance to win that football game, was very competitive in that game when the last two times that the Cowboys had played in the Super Bowl, you know, it was less competitive. They lost that game because Neil O'Donnell threw a couple of very unfortunate interceptions. And that season ended, and you ended the 95 season feeling like that team had fulfilled its potential in a lot of ways. Yes, it didn't win the Super Bowl, but it was always going to be an uphill battle to win the Super Bowl. And 94's, the problems of 94 get erased by what happened in 95. And so when we talk about 2017 and whether or not, you know, we should have made some more drastic changes, the story's not over yet, right? Because, look, if we go out in 2018 and we win a Super Bowl, or we play in the Super Bowl, or we advance, you know, we advance all the way through, are we going to sit here and cry over 2017? Of course not, right? The sins of 2017 will be fixed by the success of 2018. And yes, 2017 will always be looked at as a missed opportunity. The same way that you can look back in 94 and say it was a missed opportunity, but you don't go back in 94 and go, oh my God, that was such a, you know, there's no anger about it anymore, because that team went on to play in the Super Bowl in 95. So some of what we're talking about today is a little bit premature in that way, in that we're still very much in the middle of this story, right? We're trying to write an ending when we're still in the book. So let's not get ahead of ourselves there, but it is an interesting conversation to look back at teams and say, how many times has this team squandered opportunities, and how many times could you say that there were changes that they should have made potentially earlier, right? Because you go back to that 90s Steelers team, when there were reports that, you know, the Steelers had chances to take to get Dan Marino or to get a better quarterback than Neil O'Donnell or Cordell Stewart. And Bill Cowher was very adamant. No, I'm sticking with my guns here. I'm going with Neil O'Donnell. He's my quarterback. I'm going with Cordell Stewart. He's my quarterback. And look, Bill Cowher's early era, the early era of Bill Cowher, was largely was just good enough, but never good enough to win the Super Bowl. He lost 4 AFC championship games throughout his career and a Super Bowl. And then, of course, finally finishes it off in 2005 with a Super Bowl victory. Now, none of us are going to look back at the Bill Cowher era and say that that was a failure of an era, right? But how many times throughout the 90s could you say, boy, if they had done something a little more drastic, if they had gone out and spent big money on a quarterback, if they had gone out and done something more drastic, that 90s era Blitzberg team could have gone over the top. You could make that argument. But we don't look back at the 90s Steelers era as, I don't look back at it anyway, as being this major failure. 94 was certainly a disappointing season. 95, also disappointing, but only in that you felt like we had a chance to shock the world there and they just didn't come through. 97, they were outmatched against the Denver Broncos. 2001, I mean, that's another one where, I mean, that was a horrific year, right? Because that was the year we were 13-3. We were very, very good. Again, defensively, we were so good that season. We had Jerome Bettis and Amos Zerway and Chris Fulamatu Maafala. And I mean, we, you know, running game-wise, we were on point. We went up against a Patriots team that was very much the underdog, and Tom Brady gets hurt in that game. That was another game that felt like we could have won. But I will say this. When we talk about teams who underachieve, who don't fulfill their ultimate potential, it's not unique to the Pittsburgh Steelers, right? This is not something that's unique to us. This is the sport of football. This is the NFL that we watch. In the NFL, if you have the best team, that does not guarantee you a championship like it does in potentially other sports, right? Football is very unique in that it is single elimination in the playoffs. It's not best of three. It's not best of five. It's not best of seven. Usually, in a best of five, in a best of seven, the best team is going to come out on top. You have your Cinderella stories. You have your dramatic upsets. They happen. But they are far more rare than in a single elimination tournament. In single elimination, the best team rarely wins, I would say. Do you think the best team in 2017 was the Nick Foles-led Philadelphia Eagles? Is that the best the NFL had to offer last year? I don't know that it was, right? I don't know that that was the best team of 2017. In fact, going back through history, right, through my experiences watching the game, the best two teams I ever remember watching were the 2001 St. Louis Rams and the 2007 New England Patriots. The 2001 Rams being the greatest show on turf, part two. The 99 team won the Super Bowl. Kevin Dyson, Super Bowl, Titans, right? All of that. The Rams won the Super Bowl in 99. But 2001, I thought they had a better team. I thought that was a far better team. 2007 Patriots, that was the undefeated season, right? And it was really my most hated year of sports because the Patriots being my least favorite team, having to watch that team go undefeated and play as well as they were. It wasn't like it was a fluky 16-0, right? That was a dominant 16-0. Really only challenged in a couple of games. I remember it was a Monday night game against the Baltimore Ravens and then the last week of the season against the New York Giants were the only two times that team was even tested. Far and away the best team I've ever seen play. Far and away. Neither of those two teams won the Super Bowl. Neither of those two teams won the Super Bowl. That's the sport that we watch, right? Is that you have this team in 2007 that was so dominant that they were only tested twice all year, and yet they find a way to lose in the Super Bowl. The 2001 Rams, again, that was a team greatest show on turf. Who's going to stop them? Well, the New England Patriots stopped them. In a shocking way that started the whole Brady Belichick era. So when we talk about, especially this era right now, you know, squandering championships and that kind of thing, it's very, very hard to win a championship. You have to have great players. You have to have great coaching. But you also have to have a ton of luck. You have to have a ton of luck. You have to bring your A game every single week. And as we saw last year with that Jacksonville game, that team started off too slow to win that football game. If we go back and replay the first quarter and don't give up the early turnovers, do we win that football game? Quite possibly. Quite possibly we do win that football game. Do we then go to New England and win that football game? Maybe. Right? I mean, again, history rewrites itself. So we talk about squandering talent. You know, it's not unique to the Steelers in any way. And again, like I said, this, it's less interesting to me to talk about this season because we're still in the middle of this one. We don't know what the results of 2018 are going to be. And I think 2018 can answer for a lot of the sins that have happened. But you look back at this, just this era, right? The Killer Bee era. How many of these seasons were really squandered seasons at the end? Do we really look back at anything other than 2017 as being a truly squandered year? 2014, the Steelers lose to the Ravens at Heinz Field. Not a great game for them. Defensively, they had so many holes. No Le'Veon Bell in that game. No running back to speak of at all. They signed Ben Tate off the street. Josh Harris got a ton of carries in that game. They were very one-dimensional against a Baltimore Raven team that, you know, plays them so tough. I don't know that I look back at that team and say, boy, that was really a squandered year, right? 2015 just continued to be depleted over time. Both Le'Veon and D'Angelo Williams going down, so we're starting Fitzgerald Toussaint and Jordan Todman at running back that year. AB gets hurt against the Bengals, and we win that game in a miraculous fashion. But then against the Denver Broncos in Mile High, certainly felt like we could have won that football game. But how long was that team destined to continue that run, given AB's injury, given the complete, you know, lack of running backs on that team? 2016, which I think is the one people will point to and say, that was the year. That was the year that was squandered. And I will not even disagree with that insofar as I went into that season saying, the only thing stopping this team from winning a Super Bowl is injuries. That's the only thing, because there's too much talent on this team at this point. It would have to be key injuries at key moments that would stop this team from winning a Super Bowl. And yet, 2016 is a season that, to me, and not to spill milk here and cry about injury, but you look at the injury to Ben Roethlisberger against the Patriots. The Steelers that year, all they needed was home field advantage. You don't want to go to New England. And then they need to stay healthy in the playoff run. And in large part, you know, Ben Roethlisberger gets hurt right before the New England game. He misses one game all season. It is the home game against the New England Patriots. Then the playoff run, it's health. Everything's healthy. We're winning. Defense is playing actually up to a decent level. But, you know, we're going to look at 2016 and say that was a disappointing year, or that was a year we squandered. Here's what I will say. If the Pittsburgh Steelers, if the expectation is that the Steelers minus Le'Veon Bell go into Gillette Stadium in New England and beat that Patriot team who went on to win the Super Bowl with Kobe Hamilton starting at wide receiver, with two rookies starting in their secondary, that was the expectation? I mean, look, I will sit here and say I had hoped that team could pull off a miracle. But that team was not fully loaded that day, right? That was Ben Roethlisberger throwing to Antonio Brown, and that's pretty much it. No Ladarius Green in that game. No Le'Veon Bell minus the six carries or whatever he had. Yeah, I mean, look, it was a tough game. It was a tough loss. But, yeah, I mean, let's not act like the Steelers had more talent that day. Rookie Artie Burns, rookie Sean Davis, Robert Golden out there. I mean, that team just didn't have it. I mean, they didn't have it, right? And Gillette Stadium, New England, is a place where Tom Brady has only lost one time in his career. You have to play literally the perfect game to beat him there, because he does not lose at home in the playoffs. And the Steelers just didn't have it that day, right? They didn't have it both from a talent perspective and then, you know, ultimately they just didn't play well either. So looking back at the last 25 years of this football team, are there things we could have done that would have improved this team in the short run? Are there more major changes this team could have made that would have improved this team on the short run, but maybe hurt the stability of the team in the long run? I think absolutely without a doubt, there are times when you look back at this team and say they could have potentially had the kind of short-term success. You know, there is a precedent that was set if you look back at what happened in Tampa Bay. By firing Tony Dungy and acquiring John Gruden, that team won a Super Bowl that it may not have won with Tony Dungy. But the question you have to ask yourself is, did that precedent that they set, that they are firing Tony Dungy to bring in John Gruden, did that help the Tampa Bay Buccaneers for years to come? Was that Super Bowl that they got, was that worth it? Because again, that is the best case scenario of the way that played out, right? We've seen that same thing happen again, as I said on Wednesday's podcast, in San Diego, firing Marty Schottenheimer to bring in Norv Turner. That didn't work out so well, right? A 14-2 team goes on the next year in the AFC Championship game. They lose that. And then that team pretty much two, three years later is disbanded. And now they are stuck in a rut of having, I think, three or four head coaches since Norv Turner. So, yes, could this team have made some more drastic changes over the past 20 years? Absolutely. Absolutely. If we could have gone out and let go of Bill Cowher after 94 and potentially gotten a even better coach in 95, could that team have gone over the top? Could that team have identified Neil O'Donnell as a real problem, a hindrance to that team winning a Super Bowl? I think it could have, yes. Could we have fired Mike Tomlin after back-to-back 8-8 seasons and brought in a coach that would have brought in a different defensive philosophy, a more modern NFL philosophy, and rather than have to play out the Dick LeBeau era at the end there, we could have identified that and moved to a better defensive scheme that would have allowed us to use the offensive acquisitions that we've made with Ben Roethlisberger and Antonio Brown and Le'Veon Bell and all of this offensive talent that we've had. Could that have been the case? I think it could have been, right? If we had identified those things earlier, I think yes, we could have been a better team in the short term. I think potentially this team could have won a Super Bowl. But is that worth it? Is that worth it? Because once you make that change, once we're saying, yeah, we probably should have, maybe we would have been better off if we had fired Bill Cowher, or we had fired Mike Tomlin, or we had made some other drastic change, whatever it is. I mean, you know, changing coordinators, we do that all the time. Now, we don't blow up shop, right? It's not like we clear house coaching staff-wise. Maybe that was an answer, right? Maybe if we had cleared house coaching staff-wise after the loss in the AFC Championship game in 2016, we would have been a better team in 2017. Would have been a better defense 2017. I'm trying to think outside the box here. What are the big changes that we could have made that would have made this team a better team? Because, you know, again, we talk about firing coaches, head coaches, coordinators, making big splashes in free agency. All of these things we're talking about are precedent-setting events, especially the big ones, firing coaches. Because that is the trickle down that happens. Once you fire your coach, you now are alerting, okay, we are now in the business of this hire fire coach cycle that happens to every team. Right? Everything gets a short window. Well, I fired Tomlin to bring in the guy to come in to have the big mega success. If he doesn't have the big mega success, then I gotta get rid of him and I gotta get the new guy. And that then doesn't afford teams to build through the draft, which is what happens in Pittsburgh. We don't have to go out in free agency and get the big free agents. We can build through the draft and allow teams the time to naturally acquire talent without spending big money on guys who don't end up working out. So again, there's a cycle to all of this stuff. Yes, I will agree that there are times at this team when you look back and you go, that team should have done better. But again, I don't think that's unique to Pittsburgh. That's part of it is just the National Football League and the nature of the beast. The fact that the best team doesn't always win. But it is also, I think it all, you also can go back and say, yes, there are some mistakes that this team made that they were afforded to make because of their stability in their job. Bill Cowher didn't feel like he had to go out and win a Super Bowl early in his career because you're playing with the Pittsburgh Steelers. We're not a team that is demanding of success year in and year out. You are afforded your time to build and put it together. And it took Bill Cowher 12 years to finally bring a Super Bowl back to Pittsburgh. And Mike Tomlin right now is going through this era of, boy, Mike, you got a lot of talent. Can we come through with it? But that's the same. I mean, you know, he's going through it late in his career, where Cowher went through it early in his career. Cowher went through an early part of his career of Carnell Lake and Rod Woodson and Kevin Green and Chad Brown and Greg Lloyd. And I mean, the defensive talent that we had back then, you could put it up against the offensive talent that we have today. But no, the answer is, should we have made drastic changes? No. There is no guarantee that these drastic changes we've talked about today would have even resulted in any further success of this football team. But what it would have done is remove the kind of stability that we've seen this team have over time. And the sustained success that this team has had over the past 25 years is pretty much unparalleled, right? We'll see how the Patriots do after they have had a sustained run under Tom Brady that has been pretty good. The Packers have had a sustained run between Brett Favre and Aaron Rodgers that has been pretty good. But the run the Pittsburgh Steelers have had between Bill Cowher and Mike Tomlin is really unprecedented. It's really unprecedented. And so, no, I don't think this team should have made any drastic changes or any other changes. And I know they're going to be, you know, there's certainly two sides to this argument, right? Because I want to watch this team win a Super Bowl. And I want to watch it win a Super Bowl this year. But again, you know, let's I want to go back to what I said on Wednesday's podcast. Let's understand that it is special what we are watching, because this team doesn't have the sorts of ebbs and flows that other organizations have. Year in and year out, this team is competitive. And you can't say that about most other franchises. And I don't mean it's competitive over a 5-year run, over a 10-year run. If you go back to 1970, nearly 50 years ago, and look at the longest drought this team has had in the playoffs, it's 4 years. 4 years of not making the playoffs. Between 1985 and 1988, this team did not make the playoffs. But that's it, right? We have had an extreme run here with three coaches. It's not by accident, right? They didn't accidentally make the playoffs all these years. They didn't accidentally win 6 Super Bowls. They're on to something here. And so has this team squandered a bit of talent at times? Yes, absolutely yes. But I don't think it's unique to the Steelers. I don't think squandering talent is something that you can say, well, that is unique to Pittsburgh because of the way that they do it. I mean, yes, there are times in which you could say, boy, I would have liked to see them make a different move there. But most of the time, almost all of the time, they made the right decision in the long run. And it has proven itself over the past 50 years. So, all right, that's going to do it for me. Thank you all for listening. If you want to leave feedback, SteelerCountry@gmail.com. The Twitter is @SteelerCountry. And I'll be back on Monday for more Locked On Steelers.